On today's show, let's discuss Caitlin Clark's heroics, Iowa's stunning win over South Carolina on Friday, as well as some potential implications as it pertains to this year's WNBA draft. And then we'll also hit on LSU's victory over Virginia Tech to advance to the national title game. Lofton Women's basketball starts now.
Ogumba Wale for the win.
You are Locked On Women's Basketball, your daily podcast on women's basketball.
Welcome. You are Locked On Women's Basketball. My name is Hunter Cruz. I'm a Saturday host covering the WNBA draft and college basketball at large. Thanks for making Locked On Women's Basketball your first listen every day. And remember, Locked On Women's Basketball is free and available on all platforms, including YouTube. Today's episode is brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook, the official sportsbook of Locked On. Make every moment more. Visit FanDuel.com/LockedOn today to get started. I'm joined by Lincoln. He covers the WNBA draft and has a great eye for contextualizing prospects within their collegiate systems and also X's and O's. You can follow him on Twitter at @Dovienya_on Twitter. So starting off today, we could talk about Caitlin Clark for hours on hours, but she was incredible on Friday. She had 41 points, shot 15 for 31 from the field, made over half of Iowa's field goals. She also had 8 assists, 6 rebounds, 8 turnovers, but that's just inevitable given her on-ball usage. 6 for 6 from the free throw line, 5 for 17 from 3. So what was the main standout from you? Because we could talk about many aspects of Caitlin Clark's game. We will do that. But what was the first thing that kind of stood out for you in this game?
Yeah, the first thing was really how much she was attacking the rim to me. Because people know her for the logo threes and the incredible passing. But the way she was attacking the rim was something that hasn't been as big a part of her game as it was against South Carolina. And a big part of that was the way that Iowa was spacing the floor and not allowing as much help defense to come over as South Carolina likes to send. And it was allowing Caitlin to just get one-on-one and get right by whoever was defending her and go straight to the rim.
And South Carolina was defending super high on Caitlin. They were also having their big super high as well. Because usually, like, SEC opponents, some of their non-conference opponents, they don't have to, like, have their big so high. They can kind of drop a little bit. But Camila Cardoso, also Aaliyah Boston, were having to defend, like, almost at the level. And that was opening up so many passing windows on the roll to Monica Sinano or just one of their other cutters. Do you think her passing is, like, ultimately kind of what separates her from just being this great prospect to being this, like, generational prospect, being able to capitalize on her shooting gravity as well?
Yeah, absolutely. The passing is at a level that is almost unheard of for a college point guard to be at. She's 6 foot, maybe 6'1", which really gives her a better angle at seeing passing windows than a lot of college scoring guards that you see. And that the passing is what made her so dangerous against South Carolina, because it forced them to change their pick and roll coverage. In the first quarter, Cardoso and Boston are coming up to the level of the screen and they're hedging, but this is allowing Caitlin Clark to find the roller, to find cutters off of weak side actions and to really attack the South Carolina defense in the paint without them being able to send help because of how Iowa spaced. And later in the game, you see Cardoso and Boston more in drop and kind of late switching out of pick and rolls, which is allowing Caitlin to attack one-on-one and become a scorer. She had 19 points in the first half, which is, like, she's still scoring the ball at a really high rate. But most of her assists came in the first half. They really forced her to be more of a scorer in the second half.
And so in that first half, kind of what set the tone was her passing ultimately, because one thing you'll see with someone like Caitlin Clark was she was trying to get her teammates involved first. kind of get them going. So like later in the game's slowing down a little bit, half court situations, she's able to kind of like stop on a dime, pull up for these semi-transition threes, which they're absurd. Like just the audacity to pull up from deep in semi-transition, off movement. Some of the craziest things you'll see. And they tried like 4 to 5 point of attack defenders on her. You could argue Letitia Mihir was the best one, but even then there was like a possession where Mihir got caught around a screen and then she wasn't able to recover because Cardoso was defending so high. Because they have to defend high because they have to double Caitlin Clark from three just because she's so potent and dominant from the top of the key. So it makes so many pick and roll coverages almost impossible. Like it's almost impossible to defend her in pick and roll unless you have like maybe like a 99th percentile defender that can defend all over the court, which there's not many of those defenders in the W. So the few defenders that are just going to separate themselves even more as the WNBA and younger prospects take stuff from Caitlin Clark. Like you see it with Steph Curry, where more and more prospects are shooting from deep, more and more prospects are playing in space, running off screens, and they want to be more of that perimeter-centric player instead of being a pass-first player or being just more of like a traditional point guard. And that's sort of what Caitlin Clark is like more than what she's doing now. She's kind of changing the game in terms of women's basketball and the position in general, because most point guards in the league now are more pass first. So her game is super unique.
Yeah, there hasn't really been a point guard like her in the women's game to this point. Someone who has really good size, really good passing ability, can shoot from 30 feet, but can also get to the rim. Like her athleticism sets her apart from some of those other taller scoring guards that you might think of off the bat, like Sabrina Ionescu, who just isn't the same level of athlete. And what Caitlin's able to do without even having a ball screen is ridiculous.
And without a ball screen, that's spacing the floor even more because there's not that help defense. And with Iowa, they're, like you said, they're spaced so well all over the court that, like we saw earlier in the game, they were just able to kind of just able to get by defenders super easily. There's not a lot of help defense because it's kind of how South Carolina defends, like from the weak side. They don't usually like bring hard help over. They usually like kind of stick over to the centers. So we saw a couple moments where Aaliyah Boston and Cardoso didn't come over and help over, and she had kind of an easy look at the rim.
Yeah. Did you think a lot of that? Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, what were you going
to say? Well, a lot of that comes from Iowa spacing the floor really intentionally on several like ball screens. They had Gabby Marshall in the weak side corner, which is where your traditional help responsibilities are coming from on ball screens. But it was really obvious in South Carolina's game plan that they weren't going to let Gabby Marshall shoot. She had Zaya Cook face guarding her basically for the entire game. And so then when you change that help responsibility, they put Aaliyah Boston in the strong side corner defending a shooter, and they spaced out all of the other players on the court because they have four players who can shoot and then Monica Sinano. And it just allowed Sinano the freest roll to the rim she's seen all year. And South Carolina was kind of banking on their length at the point of attack and their length, the length of their bigs to mess with the passing angles and windows, but Clark is too good of a passer and was just able to just sneak it around Cardoso, Boston, Amihir, whoever was at the point of attack, was able to find rollers wide open. It's too easy of a pass for someone as talented as she is.
So a little bit on that note, after the break, we'll take a deeper look into what went wrong for South Carolina in this game. We know Caitlin Clark was great, but there was some stuff that South Carolina did that didn't make it easy on them. So stick with us after this break. And we're back. I'm your host, Hunter Cruz, and I'm joined by my co-host, Lincoln. And just to kick this off, what did you think was the biggest thing that went wrong for South Carolina in this game? Because sort of how it felt was Iowa kind of dictated the tempo in this game with Aaliyah Boston's fouling. Very bad calls. We could just say that first.
Yeah, they were not good. Both fouls on her in the first half were really pretty weak calls. The first one was a charge call that was a fairly obvious flop to me. And the second one was a battle for a rebound that could have been called either way. It looked kind of like it was more a foul on Iowa than South Carolina. But South Carolina was defended by Iowa the same way that 30 other teams have defended South Carolina this year. They put four defenders in the paint at basically all times. Gabby Marshall stayed out on the perimeter with Zaya Cook, but the other four defenders with length, with size, with physicality were all packed into the paint, no matter where the other South Carolina players were standing. And it killed any kind of momentum, any kind of flow that they could get on offense outside of Zaya Cook, who was awesome in this game.
Yeah, Zaya Cook. She was sort of South Carolina's offense for most of this game. She's super slippery, was getting downhill with so much pace and ease and transition as well. She didn't make a three in this game, though. Gabby Marshall did a pretty good job. Kind of, she only took three threes. Most of her shots came in the paint, in the mid-range. The only three-point threat for South Carolina was Raven Johnson, and she wasn't guarded at all. Like, those were six of the most wide-open jumpers that any player could ever take. Like, it was almost disrespectful with how Caitlin Clark was defending her, kind of like the smudge, and just kind of like just say, okay, take the shot, because she hit three of their four threes. She did hit three of them, but percentage-wise, that's something South Carolina – or that's something that Iowa's going to let South Carolina do, given that they're more of a threat from inside. And do you think there's anything that South Carolina did in particular, maybe Dawn Staley, that made it tough for them to scheme against Iowa?
I think that it'd be more accurate to say that Iowa beat South Carolina than to say that South Carolina lost this game. I think they more or less played well enough to win. They had 26 offensive rebounds. They scored 73 points. They just got beat by one of the best offensive players in college basketball, in basketball period. The one thing that I would say is that I think that Dawn may have trusted her team a little too much to defend one-on-one. She's used to being able to get stops. That team gets stops against anyone that they've seen playing straight up, playing one-on-one, and just defending their butts off anywhere on the court. But Caitlin Clark is a better shooter and a better passer than pretty much anyone they've seen this year.
And, like, yeah, South Carolina, 49 rebounds, 30 field goals, 26 of them were at two. That is sort of their identity. Like, they did pretty much everything they usually do. 11 stocks in this game. You said 26 offensive rebounds. Maybe the one thing, they didn't get to the free throw line maybe as much as they would have wanted. Only 13 free throws in this game. But I thought Cardoso was great in this game. Like, her size, Iowa just couldn't – Iowa couldn't stop that size. She was getting so many easy duck-ins. She had a couple really nice blocks at the rim as well, just defending with verticality. And did you think that like Brigg Beal in this game, because Zaya Cook was good, Cardoso was good. That was kind of like their two player game. What do you think from Brigg Beal in this game? Because I think she's kind of gotten a lot of the blame, which I don't think she really deserves all the blame, but she definitely had a rough game in this one.
Yeah, it wasn't her best showing. She has shot like 38% from three this year, but she went 0-for-4 in this one. One of her best traits on offense is her ability to throw those entry passes in a really precise way, but the way that Iowa was packing the paint made it so much more difficult to throw those passes in over the top. So she only ended up with one assist. And just the way that Iowa defended South Carolina, it was the same way that South Carolina's been defended. They just couldn't get all the same shots to fall that they usually get. They were still getting clean looks most of the time, wide open looks from three especially, and on pick and pops, on like whatever actions they wanted to. They just couldn't hit the shots that they were given.
And so after the break, we'll get into what LSU did to kind of come back in this game against against Virginia Tech, which that game was a bunch of runs just in terms of how the game was flowing. Big lead, blown lead. So we'll kind of get into that, and then also how that kind of pertains to the national championship game against Iowa, how LSU can kind of defend Caitlin Clark to maybe make things a little bit more difficult in this one. All right. So LSU, they kind of squeezed past Virginia Tech. A dynamic fourth quarter from Angel Reese specifically. She was all over the court, specifically on the offensive rebounds. What did you think we saw in this game that kind of like propelled them to come back?
Yeah, the Virginia Tech was humming on offense in the second quarter. They threw a zone defense out that LSU really struggled with, which is something that they probably saw from the SEC tournament game that LSU played against Tennessee. LSU really struggled against the zone in there. And they didn't figure it out until the second half in this game. Virginia Tech started throwing the zone out at the second quarter media timeout, and LSU didn't score for the rest of the first half. So that defensively was how Virginia Tech set the tone in the second quarter into the third quarter. But then later in the third quarter and into the fourth quarter, I thought that LSU really locked in on defense. They started picking up the ball a little higher, putting a little more pressure and denying the ball to Virginia Tech shooters, especially Kayla King, who got 3 3-pointers out of the same action in the first half. And by denying the ball and putting a little more ball pressure, they were able to force a few turnovers. Alexis Morris hit a really big three. Angel Reese got a big offensive rebound, and it kind of shut down Virginia Tech's zone and forced them to go back to playing one-on-one. And Alexis Morris and Angel Reese were really good in the second half. They did just enough offensively to get by playing really good defense the whole game.
And like we discussed with South Carolina, having Aaliyah Boston on the bench for extending periods of time, Taylor Soule, a couple of debatable calls in that one as well. She got the short end of the stick. And the coaching staff, I don't think, gave her enough leeway. Like, I felt like it's an elimination game. They should have probably given her more run, especially as because I don't think she was on the court for that entire LSU run to begin the fourth quarter. She came in, like, 3-4 minutes left, I believe, and she's one of the best defenders, probably the best defender on that team. I thought Elizabeth Kitley specifically was really good in the first half, but I feel like she kind of slowed down. She doesn't really get off the ground, in my opinion. So Angel Reese was able to kind of get up for those rebounds, and that's kind of how LSU builds their momentum, just grabbing offensive rebounds, making teams uncomfortable, and then they have like Alexis Morris, who's going to like jab at opponents, plays with a lot of energy. So Alexis Morris, yeah, she had 27 points, 2 rebounds, 2 assists. She was a lot of LSU's offense early on, and she shot 2 for 9 from 3. But what did you think from her in this game? I know it's kind of debatable if she had a great game, but she was definitely impactful in offense for LSU.
Yeah, she – I mean, sometimes you just need someone to take the shot. And with the way that LSU attacked the offensive glass late in the game, it didn't really matter who was taking that first shot because they were getting 2 more shots after that. Alexis Morris was – it's one of those situations where you just need someone to do something offensively, and Alexis Morris was more than willing to take that responsibility on. And she ended the game with 27 points, which I wouldn't necessarily say it was a great game from her, but it was just enough, and it was exactly what LSU needed from her.
And she, even despite some of her struggles efficiency-wise, she definitely outplayed Georgia Amor. Amor went 4 of 17 from the field, 4 of 15 from 3. It almost felt like she was settling for a couple of jumpers as well, because she is a great shooter, but she wasn't getting to the rim as much as you would like, especially because Virginia Tech, they spaced the floor so well. I don't think she got to the rim nearly as enough as she needed to. Only 2 assists in this game. And then also another main thing I thought kind of dictated this game as well was, I think Kayana Traylor, she played really well as well. Who do you think, if looking ahead, who do you think is going to be given that matchup on Caitlin Clark, and how do you think LSU will try to defend her?
Yeah, I think that they're gonna throw a lot of bodies at Caitlin Clark, kind of the same way that they defended Amor in this game, with a lot of traps, a lot of extra help being sent at her off ball. Like when Amor was flying off of off-ball screens, the big defending the screener was popping out to defend her to make sure she didn't get a clean look off of those screens. And I would imagine that LSU continues that same way. I think that they'll probably start with Alexis Morris guarding Caitlin Clark, but I would not be surprised to see someone like Jasmine Carson, someone like Flajae Johnson, getting that matchup for a few minutes at a time as well.
Because LSU has a super small backcourt, like 5'5", 5'6".
Yeah.
And I don't think their front court is super versatile either. Like, Angel Reese struggles defending in space sometimes. So I think, yeah, Flajae is going to be probably their best option in terms of having like the size, having the versatility, the athleticism. But, yeah, Jasmine Carson as well, just – They're going to have to throw as much as possible at Caitlin Clark. And what do you think in terms of how this game's going to go? Do you think this is a type of game that it's all based around how Caitlin Clark kind of dictates the game? Because that's sort of Iowa's offense that's built around Caitlin Clark. If she's humming, the offense is great.
Yeah. I think Iowa is probably going to try and dictate the pace again, the same way that they did against South Carolina. They're going to try to be running on misses, running on live ball turnovers, and sometimes even running on makes. And that is going to be a really big key for LSU, because they're so dominant on the offensive glass, the same way that SC was, that they'll have to make a decision on whether they want to be attacking the glass as hard as they have all season, or whether they want to try and get back to stop those leakouts and those transition threes. One thing I just wanted to mention is that LaDasia Williams was really good for LSU in this game. Her scoring is kind of the thing that carried them through the lulls in the third quarter and helped to put them over the top at the end of the game, because Liz Kitley was the primary defender on LaDasia, and Williams just hit enough of those little 12-foot push shots to really make Kitley come out and guard her a little bit more, which opened up driving lanes for the other LSU players.
I seriously think this game could be in the 80s, the 90s maybe, because in the regular season, I know South Carolina, I know how LSU's pace of play in the regular season was one of the top in the country. They kind of slowed down in tournament play, being more just slowing the pace down, being more aggressive on the offensive boards, kind of making the game slower and being able to maximize some of their strength. In this game, given Iowa's not the greatest defensive team, I think that they'll need to push the pace to kind of keep up offensively. I think we're going to need Alexis Morris to make some threes, Jasmine Carson maybe as well, because – She hasn't played a lot recently, I don't think. And this is kind of a game they might need her more than someone like Poole, I think.
Yeah.
Just having more of that off-screen movement, being able to have another player that can catch fire and be more of like a microwave scorer off the bench, which is something that they might need in the runs, because Iowa can go on some runs. We saw it early in the game where they got off to like a 9-0 run multiple times. LSU, similarly enough, does not have a lot of shooting. So just to keep up, it's going to have to be one of their few shooters in terms of like Alexis Morris and Jasmine Carson for me.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see Iowa's defensive game plan, because they were really dedicated to their game plan against South Carolina, packing the paint defensively when they're at a size disadvantage. And the way that LSU comes out with 2 6-4 front court players is going to put them at a similar size disadvantage. So I would imagine that McKenna Warnock gets the Angel Reese assignment to start, the way that she got the Aaliyah Boston matchup to start last night. And that Sonano is put on LaDeja Williams. But I'll be interested to see where Caitlin Clark ends up defensively, because she was helping off of usually Kira Fletcher or Raven Johnson a lot against South Carolina. So I would imagine that she'll be in that same situation as kind of a supersized point guard helper off of maybe Flage or one of the other LSU guards, because they haven't really proven that they can shoot in these big moments.
And that's why it's so big for LSU to shoot, because if they shoot, there's going to open up a lot more inside. They won't be able to help as hard in terms of Caitlin Clark being able to double the posts. So that's kind of how this game might get dictated, is whether LSU's going to be making shots early. If LSU can get off to like a few makes, be able to switch up Iowa's defensive coverages, I think they could blow it open for a little bit, or this game could kind of go how Iowa wants it to go. They push the pace. LSU has to try to keep up, and then it kind of gets down to a fourth quarter battle. So it's going to be super interesting. Not the championship game anybody probably expected, having no number one seeds making it this far, which is fun. Just having that parity, having a player like Caitlin Clark that can reel a team as like a heliocentric creator. It's super unique in the women's game, because like we've seen with past Final Fours, past title teams, it's more built around having just a super strong infrastructure of talent, WNBA prospects. LSU, Iowa, this team has a couple WNBA prospects in this game, not many as we usually see in a championship game. So it's a nice switch up to what's typically the blue blood programs in the championship game. So it'll be very interesting. Thanks for making Locked On Women's Basketball your first listen today. Now make your second listen game-to-game NBA. Every moment, every top performance, every result. Locked On game-to-game covers every game across the NBA with local analysis that only Locked On can deliver. Follow game-to-game on Locked On NBA, available in the Odyssey app, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcast. Next week, we'll dive into our boards more. That will be releasing after the Final Four. Our draft boards will have detailed analysis on over 15 prospects in this upcoming class, some international prospects to watch, some draft and stash players. It'll be very, very educational and good information for anyone that's trying to decide, kind of get a better look at who's going to be in this class, who the favorite teams might target beyond the lottery prospects. So have a great weekend, everybody.
I still can't believe that someone beat South Carolina.
No, I can't either. They were like a double-digit favorite in this game. It's incredible.
Yeah.
It's incredible.